I want to welcome you guys today, Tom and Jeannie Osterberg. Thank you guys for joining us. It's really a privilege to get to have a conversation with you today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Well, this has really been a neat thing, hearing from families throughout this series about these kind of conversations with couples, just finding out about their marriages, finding out about how, you know, our main kind of big picture with this series has been oneness, one plus one equals one. So it's really what we've been trying to flesh out in a lot of different ways. And there are some real consistent patterns that go between marriages, and others are relatively unique. So we're really glad you're here with us today. We could ask you some questions. First off, I just wanted to get some general context. Tell us a little bit about how long you guys have been married. Tell us about kids, grandkids, just what that extended family looks like.
So I'll chip in. You can, you know, add and subtract along the way. So we got married. This year will be 36 years.
Cool.
That's great. And at the time that we started dating, I was a Christian school teacher, and Jeannie was a preschool teacher, and we met on a blind date.
Then
we didn't date for a while, which was actually, I didn't even call, which was good for you, right? And
Jury's out. Like, well.
That was a good thing.
Yeah, and she can explain why. And then 3 months after we first met, I proposed, and 3 months after that, we got married. So really fast.
And wow, boom.
So continue the story.
And we have three kids. Justin is from my first marriage. My first husband died when he was two, when Justin was two. And so then I was a widow for 7 years and then met Tom.
Yeah.
And Tom adopted Justin. And then we had two more kids, Seth and Emma. And they are all married and they are all Christ followers. And we have five grandchildren.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do they live relatively close where you guys get to see grandkids, or where are they at?
Justin and Cherry live in the high desert and they go to HDC.
Mm-hmm.
And you dedicated those two boys to the Lord, my two grandsons. I know you don't remember them.
I didn't
remember you either.
It was a couple years ago anyway.
But yeah, but they're 13 and 11 now. And then Seth and his wife live in Henderson with two kids. And Emma and Danilo live in Loma Linda with little Lila.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, one of the questions that we've been asking kind of along the way, I have this, sense that we often do what we do in our marriages and in parenting either consistent in some ways with what we saw in our homes growing up, or almost like intentionally not, you know, like opposed. But either way, the homes we grew up in, they shape and they influence to some degree the way we begin to live out our lives as adults, marriages, and parenting. So through the marriage lens, maybe walk us back. What would be some things that you would say from your homes of origin that you saw that either to the one hand were really good examples and things you wanted to emulate in your marriage, or things you're like, well, we're going to really try to do something different? And the goal is not to bash. It's a little bit more just to say, this is the context we came from.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine was much of a quiet, not emotional, not compassionate. This sounds like a bad thing. The home that I grew up in, I don't think I ever remember my dad saying, I love you. And that's because of the Scandinavian background. And I think he felt he was still doing the right thing. Sometimes he'd say, of course I love you.
Yeah,
and
my actions show it, kind of.
Right, exactly. In providing for us and his faithfulness to my mom. And yet, as I saw Jeannie's family and their compassion outwardly, and just even saying the words, I love you, I want to make sure she hears that every day. Every time I leave and going someplace, she needs to hear that from me. So I learned a lot from Jeannie's family, and I definitely want to live the way that they live.
Good. More to that side. What would you say, Jeannie?
You know, both of our parents were married over 50 years.
Great example.
My parents over 60.
Great example.
Yeah. So we inherited this idea that when you get married...
You're married.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so that was one thing. And Tom came from a very strong church-going Christian home.
Yeah.
I came from a Christian principles home, but not church-going at all. So one of the things I think that I did differently, I didn't have to do, but I wanted to do with our family, was be involved in church. And I didn't have any of that as a kid. So that was one of the big things.
Yeah.
The other thing for me that, I mean, there was so much that we wanted to be like our families, our parents. But one of the things that I chose to do differently was I never saw my mom and dad fight. And so things would get really quiet sometimes.
Yeah.
And my mom would disappear for a few hours. And it was terrifying as a child.
Ooh.
And I think it was terrifying for my dad, too. And that's how, I mean, I think she just went away to get her act together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Process.
But so we didn't really know what it looks like to fight.
Yeah. And to fight fair and
yes.
in a healthy way.
And I didn't want our kids to be afraid in that way. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't fight a lot, but we've tried to be open and say, you know, we're really having an issue here and we need to deal with it. And then to bring the kids in when we get ourselves resolved.
Yeah, we talked about that.
That
was important for us to do that.
Yeah. So isn't that interesting where sometimes we would say there's a concern, you know, we don't want to fight in front of our kids. And you're not saying that like, oh, we love it, you know. But it's interesting what you said there, Jeannie, was powerful when my mom's way of coping was just to leave. In the same way that a child might be frightened to see parents maybe being emotive, just the fact of being gone is its own kind of fear.
Terrifying.
You know, like, what's happening? Is she coming back? All those things, right? So that's very powerful to hear that.
And I think we also assured each other, I know we're fighting now, but this doesn't mean we're going to break up.
Yeah.
We know
yeah.
that at the end of this,
we're going to work it out.
And we would even ask, do you need some space and time? And so oftentimes we do that. We just agree that we need to come back to it later and that this does mean that there's a little rocky right now, but we're going to continue together. We're committed. And it wasn't going to be...
And I'm sure that translated to your kids as well, like meaning they're seeing there's a discussion, argument, but their minds aren't going, oh, no, this is it. They're going, no, we've already had this conversation. Mom and dad aren't going anywhere. We're just working this out. We're going to find resolution. And it's healthy for you to actually see some of this because, again, if you don't know what that even looks like, and then your kids get married, then they're like, we don't even know. We don't have any tools, right, of how to engage wisely.
Yeah.
No, that's really great, you guys. I appreciate that. So back us up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, you said that you guys met on a blind date. I'd like to hear a little bit more about how you guys got set up, who made those introductions, and then I have a follow-up question for you on that.
Okay. So I will, again, chip in, and then I'm sure you can change that if you'd like to. So
it wasn't even you can add to it. It was no, you could change it.
Exactly. There's definitely a he said and a she said. So I was teaching and coaching at a Christian school and was active in my church in a singles group. With really good friends, Dick and Sandra McCormick, they go to like Pomona, but that we stay in touch and they want to find out what's going on as far as dating. And I say, well, I'm dating, I'm not dating. And they say, well, you got to meet this lady. And I said, well, I happen to be helping to coach a team in the CIF basketball playoffs, which is down your way. Can you set something up? So they set up the date. And so I have one picture of what it's going to look like. And so I go down to meet Richard and Sandy again. They just adopted somebody. And so they had to play with the new baby. Then they had to go to the babysitter. And then we had to go to pick up Jeannie. And then we had to get to the game. Well, here's the game. Here's Richard and Sandy. Here's the babysitter. Here's Jeannie. We get to the game at halftime.
Oh, no.
And I thought I was supposed to help coach. So I walk over to the varsity coach and I say, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. And so we lost. And after the game, we went to PJ Pizzazz and had pizza, and we played video games, which you'd never played. And then at the end, I'll say that until later. So why don't you chip in your thoughts along the way?
I mean, that's kind of the way it
happened. How did you know Tom's friends? How did that?
She was working for me. I was directing a preschool, and
okay.
she was one of my teachers, and she kept telling me she wanted me to meet this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so... And I just want to, I mean, I don't know if this has anything to do with anything, but I really want to say this. I had been a widow for
mm-hmm.
7 years, and I was okay with it. I actually was doing fine, and I'd had a marriage. I'd been married before, and I was okay with being single. And but at some point in there, and I think it was about 5 years in,
mm-hmm.
I said to myself, you know, what if I ever get married again? I better know what I want. And so I made myself a list.
Well,
I seriously did. And I've shared this list with a lot of people before because I said, the guy has to be, he has to like people. My first husband was a creative genius, wonderful musician, but he was pretty much of a loner too. So this guy has to love people. He has to love children because I love children. And he's got to be, you know, he's got to really get a kick out of that. He has to work with his hands because my dad could make anything. And I thought a man needs to be able to build stuff. You know, that's important. But the most important thing was this guy has to have a relationship with Jesus that my bad moods cannot affect in any way. Mm-hmm. It's got to be independent of my anything I could do to wreck
it.
But he has to be extremely patient because I required that a lot. And
you had a good self-awareness.
Yes, I did. I require a lot.
I know what this person's going to need.
So I made my list. This is before I ever met Tom. I made my list. And then I looked at it and I went, you know what? Even if I never, ever get married again, God has changed me enough to now I know what to pick. Mm. Because it was Jesus. Mm. Relationship with God, independent of any of those disciples, no matter what, you know, go away to spend time with the Lord. Extremely patient. Just put up with them repeatedly. Loved children. You know, told people not to send them away. Liked people, had parties, turned water into wine at the wedding. I mean, you know, the other thing was that he knew how to take the bull by the horns. Yes, he had to be patient, but he also needed to know what to get mad at and how to do it righteously. And that was Jesus too. So I thought, okay, now I know how to pick.
Yeah.
That's a good thing for me. And then I met Tom, and he pretty well
covers
fits
those bases.
Bill.
Yeah.
The working with the hands thing. We're a little iffy on that. But,
I paint houses.
But he does paint houses. But all the rest of it, it was really good for me as a human being to know, okay, this is where I'm aiming. And then Tom came along after that.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Rather, you know, like we talk about that a lot, related to a lot of ministry goals. Often we'll do something and then we'll paint the bullseye afterwards and go, that was successful.
Yeah.
As opposed to go, let's paint the bullseye first.
Yes.
And then we can match according to, we have a grid, right, to aim at, something to aim at.
Supporting what she just said, in me being single and dating different people and being not happy with the results, I started to realize that I needed to just let God guide me and develop in me who I needed to be so I could be a compliment for whoever. And at the same time, I wanted whoever I'd end up marrying to do the same thing.
Yes.
That they would have a growing, healthy relationship. So she was being changed by God and allowing God to change her while I was trying to do the same thing.
That's
so
very cool.
We would be ready. We wouldn't wait for the right person to turn out.
Yeah.
We would be who God wants us to be.
Now, one of the things we talked about even before we hit record today is that this week's message, in which everything, you know, we'll have you guys talking, actually relates to, we'll spend a lot of time on singleness and talking through God's design. And what you've both articulated so well is that, you know, and I know this from friends I've talked to. I haven't lived it, so that makes it a tenuous topic to talk about. Like, you don't know what you're talking about, Todd. And I get that. I'll play that card now. But as I talk to people who are in very different, very various different life stages of singleness, one of the things that I have found is exactly what you've articulated, and that is if I am living in such a way that I am so aware of an incompleteness and looking for that person to do that, I'm creating a void that no human being can fill.
Exactly.
And I will be let down every single time because no one was made to do that.
And that's not very attractive to other people.
Exactly. No. It sends a message too, right? There is a, I don't want to use the word neediness, but there is that sense of just, I'm needing all of this from you,
right,
where I think most people back off, like, I can't be that, so I'm not going to go any further. So you're right, all those kind of reciprocal things, but I love hearing you guys state that because that's helpful for some people that are listening today that are wondering, how do I navigate these waters? And doesn't it come back to what you both said? We had to come to a point where we had satisfaction and contentment in who Jesus was and who we were in those circumstances, rather than just always being about someone else, somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
I'm here and I'm trusting him and I'm just walking that out. Is that a fair way to say that?
No, yeah. And I guess that the phrase I used to use was, you get to be addicted to being in love.
Yes.
That feeling, that emotional feeling. So you go from one relationship to another relationship and it's futile. What you need to do is listen to God and say, what do you want me to do at this time? I don't need to focus on me. I need to focus on whatever you want me to focus on. And
that's
serve.
So great, you guys. Thank you. That's going to be, I'm going to tell you now in our conversation on Sunday, this is like, while the thing's playing, I'm still going to say this. I'm not going to even talk about this, but I am going to ask, I am going to mention on this topic today, you need to listen this week for Tom and Jeannie's journey and how that related to the aspect of their singleness, but ultimately led to their marriage.
Yeah.
So thanks, you guys. That's super insightful, very helpful. Well, let's get back to the topic of your marriage.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that. That's kind of what we're here for. Let's talk a little bit. We, you know, we've used this word oneness a lot.
Right.
And it's not meant to be like a mystery word. I just think it's a really good synonym if you're trying to capture the essence of marriage. How, what does that look like when you think about Tom and Jeannie doing life together for 36 years? What does kind of oneness look like in your relationship, your marriage together?
I'll let you start this time.
Okay. All right. Full disclosure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You told the story about the candles at your wedding and how you laid them down. Well, Tom and I had those candles too. Mm-hmm. And we had decided in advance, because we had independent relationships with the Lord, we wanted to leave those candles burning, mm-hmm. and the one in the middle as well. But during the ceremony, the middle one blew out.
So you're wondering, is this auspicious? Yes. Like,
so much for symbols. Somewhere it's working out.
Something's got to go wrong. Yeah. It always does, right?
That's great.
That was like, oh no.
It was help us to watch and be careful.
So I think people who are doing different symbols say like sand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot safer than that thing blowing everything out. So it wised up beyond us.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think I believe this with all of my heart. The reason why our marriage is as good as it is because he's a servant leader. He is a servant leader of our family, and that's allowed me to be who I am in wonderful ways, and I'm just grateful for that. And I think that's honestly, I do. I think that's why.
Part of what I realized early on is I got an incredibly good deal, and I knew how much Jeannie was giving up because of where she was plugged in, and I was just praying that we would find the right church for us to be in, because I wanted Jeannie to feel comfortable and be able to be planted and bloom and use some of her talents and gifts. And that really happened. I knew that she loved kids and all these other skills she had, and I knew she loved me, but I had no idea. She's incredibly talented, gifted, and gives so much. And she got to do that here at Trinity.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Trinity really has allowed you to develop your skills over time. So, and I felt that God allowed me to really enjoy my career in teaching was just, it was a lot of work, but it was so much fun. So it was fun to come home and say, how can I help you to do the best that you can at Trinity?
He really got that, that whole thing you were talking about, what a husband is supposed to do. Yeah, Tom gets it.
So kind of, yeah, I love that. So where we would, a lot of conversations with wives are, I wish he would, number one, lead. And secondly, I wish he would do it in such a way that I know he's going to care for my needs before his own. You would say,
he does.
Tom gets that. Yeah, that's great.
Because
there's a lot of wives who really struggle with that.
Yeah,
conversely, because husbands aren't, right? I mean, that's why they struggle with it, because it's not happening. That's really cool. And would you say, let me ask this question. So Tom, kudos to you, by the way. That's really cool to hear that. And then Jeannie, would you say when you, because I keep testing this theory, that the kind of God-given energy that a relationship receives when a husband, like Hilke mentioned on his week, has that sacrificial love towards his wife, it energizes a wife to say, who wouldn't want to follow, who wouldn't want to respect that kind of husband? Is that fair? Do you see that energy that creates within your marriage?
Yes, and I also, I mean, we're realistic too, and I tell Tom that he, on the big decisions that he makes them, with, of course, my advice, but it behooves him to listen to me.
Yeah. That's a good leader,
so,
right?
That's your decision. You're answering for it. But, you know, you better take my good advice if you're wise. But anyway, I mean, that way, the functioning part of marriage, I feel really comfortable in being able to do that.
Yeah. And I just, I love that. And I'd love to hear your guys' experience flesh that out. Because I feel like there's some couples who might even be listening to this who are wondering, does it really work? Like, can you really live in that with contentment and joy? And does that even, that thing of sacrificial love and willing respect, do they work together to produce an ongoing energy? And the ones who are listening who are wondering that are wondering it because it's not happening, either with their spouse or with them or both. And I would just want to encourage you, if you're listening today, from Tom and Jeannie and countless others who would say that, yeah, when you will take God's word at his design, you experience a blessing within your marriage of that. Doesn't make it easy. Doesn't mean there's no problems. No one's saying that. But it is something that is a blessing in your life, not the burden of just like, oh, this relationship's killing me, kind of a thing. And that's what I want people to be able to see. I loved what you were saying too, Tom, that the recognizing the giftedness in each other, your giftedness and love for teaching, Jeannie's giftedness and love for working with children on so many different fronts, that when you kind of value that in each other, then it really excels that. You become a team. You have things in common. You root for one another, rather than maybe these stark lives, it's your thing, my thing, but seeing ways we can encourage and enhance each other's thing. Yeah. So
I think that's true. And we do have your thing, my thing, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I love that he has his thing.
Yeah.
And, some things.
Right.
And he can have that other part of his life that I feel like is really good. We don't do everything together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's okay.
I think another commonality I have, we're both kind of like a project mindset type person and enjoy the journey along that way. So you've got used to the kids camp here, right? And which was a huge project. Or you did the children's musical, which was a huge project. So it was fun for me to help support you in that. And I had some activities like that where I was working as well. And so we know that there's going to be some crazy times in life. And we accept that. And we know that you can celebrate at the end of some big project and really look back and enjoy that and realize how much of an influence you get to be.
That's great. Yeah, seeing life as seasons, I think that's a really powerful tool. A lot of families struggle with that. And to be fair, maybe the seasons never really end, and that's why it is
like
such a struggle.
Yeah, like
but if you can kind of, a lot of us can put up with a lot of things for a few weeks or a few months,
right,
knowing it's going to change.
Right.
Things will be different.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great, you guys. All right, well, let's talk conversely then. If those are some of the ways that you guys see oneness kind of fleshing out in your marriage, what are some of the challenges? What are the things that make oneness difficult? What are the things, if you back it up, you look at it and go, well, this is why we're feeling kind of in our own corners or not on the same page?
Somebody already said this in one of the other interviews, but it's the E word, expectations.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, we found that from our honeymoon on, even before our honeymoon.
You should tell them the story about who's going to take the money.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things on our honeymoon. I had a major meltdown because we were at SeaWorld, I wanted to buy a Coke, and I all of a sudden thought, I am going to have to ask permission every time I want to do anything for the rest of my life now. And I just like, oh, no. And Tom was like so cool. He just looked at me and went, do you want to hold the money? Give me all the money. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Okay. But it was the expectations. That's always been the thing. And before we got married, I mean, I wrote him a 10-page letter about, we have never discussed capital punishment. We have never discussed gun control. We have all these issues I do not know your position on, and I cannot marry you until,
Well, and
we've hardly talked about that much.
Well, and you said you guys moved relatively quickly, so
we
understand.
Well,
we went
through the letter and talked about it, and remember, I was worried about being addicted to being emotionally connected to somebody, so I didn't tell her that I loved her because I so wanted it. I wanted Jeannie to be the right person for me to marry. And that was another thing that was in the letter. Well, and by the way, you haven't said that.
Yeah,
so
great
on
that, too.
And this is a few weeks before the wedding, but we talked about that.
So anyway, it's just expectations. And I think that it's, in fact, I know, I don't just think. We know that our minds think the way we were raised and according to our experiences.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily consciously realize you're expecting something.
Sure. It's very innate.
But, yeah.
You have to find time to talk about that.
Though when it comes right in your face, you're like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. And another thing that you'll probably ask us later, but I really think prayer has helped us along the way. immensely, mm-hmm. and having routine times of prayer, like before we start the car to go somewhere, we pray. We might go walking, and then we'll start praying. And just at a different point, let's stop and talk about this, and then wait and see what God does, and that encourages you to pray some more.
That's great. Yeah, so and doesn't prayer do that? It kind of like we're facing something. Some of the things are, like you said, more routine, and other times we're going through something kind of heavy. But when we're praying, not only are we talking to God about the issue, but we're actually bringing him into the middle of this conversation. Rather than like two children kind of wandering and wondering, does dad even know what's going on? Yeah. And like, oh no, he's right here with us. You know, he can walk us through this. Yeah. So that's great. Yeah. Would you say too, like I want to ask you a question that's back up to expectations. Okay. Within that, would you say that the reason why oneness begins to be a challenge at that point is because maybe two things, like you said, they're innate, so we don't always verbalize them, and so we're just kind of running on a rail and like, why aren't you over here with me? You know, we're not on that. But also when we don't verbalize them, then there's at some point a clash, mm-hmm. two different expectations. For people listening, do you find the help being when we'll at some point, hopefully as we keep journeying together, do this sooner and sooner? Hey, I've got an expectation of how this is going to go or what we should do right now. Am I on the same page with you? Is that what you keep seeing? Is that we're talking more and more about those things
I think it helps. And then there's this thing called a calendar, which I have mistakenly. Don't double or triple book yourself. It's not very happy with your wife when you come home. You realize that. Just, I have messed up more times than I should.
But exactly, you know, I mean, I think about vacations for one thing, because we didn't have a whole lot of them when our kids were little, and Tom worked really hard in the summertime. So they were very precious times, but we didn't really, until later, verbalize with each other, what are we expecting when we're together, you know, when we have this precious time. And so now, I mean, we do talk about that kind of thing a lot more now, before the fact rather than during or after the fact. And
it helps. It helps a lot.
But it's easier to spot. We had expectations. That's why we're having
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Earlier in our marriages, huh? That's a little bit more shielded and mm-hmm. it's veiled for us. And then the more we're in it, we're like, wait a second, I think I know what's going mm-hmm. on. Exactly. No, that's great.
Thanks a lot.
I appreciate that. That's great, you guys. When you think about marriage skills, we had Bill and Pam Farrell out last week, and I think it was in Bill's time with the guys, he mentioned there's some skills related to marriage. And what that means is, on the one hand, some people might be more innately gifted in those, and others of us, we have to learn that more. But now you've been doing this for 36 years, what are some of the skills that you have found are most vital to just the health of your marriage? And they could be maybe different from you, Tom, than they are Jeannie, or maybe they're the same, but what things have helped you when you look, and you can maybe even compare it with how you started. Here we were, here's where we are. Why are things better? And maybe it's because we've gotten better at these things.
Hmm. Well, I'll throw out an idea, and again, you can add some more. Mm-hmm. I think in any relationship, sometimes when there's something that happens, you're wondering, why is he saying that? Why is he looking this way? Some people just need to ask people to elaborate a little bit. Mm-hmm. And maybe what you're saying is fine. And so the more times that I don't react to Jeannie, but just ask her to just develop that thought a little bit. And I know some of the things that I've done that at first seemed to you really strange. And then when you ask me to elaborate it, you go... And then sometimes I'm just too brief, and then you help me get to the next layer and the next layer that I hadn't even thought about.
He's more of a spaghetti than you'd think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I hadn't even thought about that really is the foundation of why I'm responding this way. So as I listen more and react less, I think
that's good.
We're close.
Sounds a lot like James 1, right? Be quick to listen. Slow to speak, slow to become angry. Yeah. So you just had two of those right there. The more I'm listening and the less I'm reacting. Because usually the reaction's anger, not joy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting really... No, I'm not excited. This is bad. So that's great.
And so then I end up agreeing with her.
Yeah.
99.9% of the time.
That's good. Anything to add to that, Jeannie? What would you say about skills that you guys have just... As a result of being married, you're seeing yourselves getting better at this. You see value.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a skill, but there's something about knowing and trusting the person to know some of your, like, functions don't have to be negotiated every single time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, every time's not a brand new conversation.
Yeah.
We'll have to start all over
again.
And
you sort of find comfortable things that you trust the other person to do in their own way and vice versa. And then it just makes life easier. I don't know if that's a skill, but that's the only thing I could come up with right now.
No, that's great.
Well, another thought, and again, you can modify it, is as we get to know each other better, you can understand their response and the temperature. I mean, yes can be said lots of different ways.
Sure.
And so
tone and
you,
body
you tune
position.
In and go, no, wait a minute. Tell me more.
You know, or, I heard yes, but I saw and
yeah, you can
the tone
feel
is a little
the temperature
bit
different. In the room is entirely different than it was
good.
5 minutes ago.
Yes.
And so we just need to pay attention to each other and don't let the yes just go.
Yeah. Because you know, maybe earlier in the marriage, I heard yes,
yeah.
I'm
so
out.
So it's okay.
It's
yeah,
all good.
I can go.
But then you're like, as you go, like...
She gave me permission to go, but I know I'm in trouble.
It was not a good
I'm
idea.
In trouble.
I shouldn't be acting on this.
Yeah.
No, that's great. But I love, you did that well, Tom. You summarized it well. The more that we pay attention to each other.
Yeah.
See, I love that because that's a skill, right?
Yeah.
Because it's generally, we could say, we need to get better paying attention to other people. But man, we're talking about our spouse. It's kind of exegeting them, understanding kind of what that posture looks like, what that tone means, you know, all those things. And that's the beauty of marriage. We get, hopefully a lot of chances to get to do that.
Yeah.
36 years or 36 years of chances to get to better understand how that person's wired and how they respond.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. Yeah, those are good skills because I think there are people listening. Remember, one of my things is that I think the youngest or the least years married that we have done these interviews with is 30. So everyone's 30 and beyond.
Mm.
So one of the things we wanted to do was to help, especially couples, let's say in their first 5 years of marriage, their first 10, I want to help them see some things that they can look forward to if they'll keep following God's design, rather than maybe kind of stew in frustration that this isn't getting better or we're never going to get good at this or, you know, blah, blah, we keep having the same fight about. And the reality is that what's going to happen is there is going to be a give and a take. There's going to be change and growth if we'll keep trying to walk it God's way. And I want them to hear some couples who have walked that out and look back and say, well, these are things that got us through that, or these are areas we grew in.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you guys' input. Tell me about, maybe there's an individual who's listening who's married, or maybe there's a couple who's listening and they are struggling with oneness. They've heard this topic. They've kind of almost immediately as we start talking about it, they almost go to the negative, like they know where they're not functioning in this. What would be some words that you might have, just words of advice or encouragement for couples struggling with living in marital oneness? What would you want to say to them?
I'll try something, and you can erase it from the tape if you want to. So I remember, and I will bring it back to marriage, I promise. I remember the first year of teaching school, I was frustrated with myself a little bit and felt like I wasn't fully prepared. And I talked to another veteran teacher, and he said, you know what? You're not the teacher you will be someday. And what will get you there, and he said, probably you won't be good at teaching until about 5 years. He said, you know, you got to learn your stuff, and then you add to it, and you add to it, kind of like being in a play. You've got to memorize the lines before you can act. But what gets you from year one to year five is that the kids know that you love them. The kids know that you care. And so I think in marriage, we have to continually be committed to our lives with our wives and be content with that and be committed to grow and know that we're not the finished product yet, that God will bring us closer along the way. And the fact that my wife knows that I care 100% and that I'm teachable, that's going to get us a long way.
That's good. I agree with that. And it reminds me, we've been in our home group with, we have a couple, maybe three young couples that are, they just blow my mind because they come and they're like in med school or whatever, and they're so committed to coming to this group. And they were talking just recently about how much they respect all of us old old couples and how much they've learned from us, la, la, la. And I remember just sitting there going, I relate more to them than I do to, you know, I don't feel like we have any kind of wisdom. And yet, when you actually think, okay, we've had experiences, yeah, we have learned some things. But I was thinking, man, I feel like I still relate more to the learners than I do to the
accomplished,
wise, wise ones. So, and I don't think that's bad. I don't want to feel completely incompetent, but I do like the idea that I'm still having to learn.
Yeah, in a position to still be open and new and trying out things and putting them into practice rather than we've arrived.
Yeah. And we had a low point in our marriage when, what was it, about 10 years? We argued about how long ago it was when we went to our one time of marriage counseling.
It was probably in the first 3 or 4 years.
Okay, I think it was longer than that, but whatever. It was in the summertime, and everything was just, we had kids are going everywhere, we're working really hard, and Tom just worked so hard in the summertime, and and it was like, is this it? That we came to that. That's why I think it was about 10 years, but whatever. It was that period where we're like, is this going to be it forever? Mm-hmm. And so we decided that we were going to go talk to a marriage counselor. But we were too proud to go to anybody in Redlands because somebody was going to see us. So his brother connected us with a gal in Orange County, and it cost us $50, and that was a sacrifice. Yeah. So we left early, and we got there early, and we sat in the car, and we talked and talked and talked, trying to figure out, you know, what is she going to say? And we went in, and the lady had said, you know, I saw you sitting out in the car. I thought, what a nice young couple. They're in there. Nicely, they
getting all prepared.
So anyway, that was her. But what we learned from that was two things. One of them was, I can tell you what I learned. She told me, I thought I was being disloyal to my husband if I did not share all of my angst with him and everything with him before I should talk to anybody else. Because, you know, he's my best friend and he's my spouse. That was like blowing poor Tom out of the water. It was too much. I got way too much emotion on the first round to lay on him. So she told me, you can find a very close friend or two and sort of run some of those things by him. And then, you know, you're going to tell the truth and share with him. But don't, you know, you're like a fire hose.
Yeah, it's always like a fire hydrant versus a water hose. Like,
exactly.
You know, how do I tame that?
And you need to have a little bit of patience with this guy. And him, it was more like you need to learn how to step up and communicate and speak out.
True.
More. Yeah. And so we felt, at least I do, and I think we've talked about this, that was the best $50 we ever spent.
Oh, yeah. Mm. But and another thing that renewed for me is the purpose of my going is so that our marriage would be stronger. It wasn't so I could blame her and say the reason why this marriage was bad was because everything she was doing wrong. That wasn't why I wanted to go.
Yeah.
I wanted to grow closer and get some skills, and the net result would be for us to be closer.
So could I paraphrase one thing we would say along with the actual content that you heard, you would say as a couple, if you're struggling, get some help.
Definitely.
Talk to some
people.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is such a huge thing, you guys, because there is, whether it be people know me in this city and they might see me, or just this general cloud over, well, we're really admitting something if we're going to get help and we don't want to do that. Yeah. And I just know there are so many couples I have talked to at that premarital stage of don't be too proud to come and see me. I'm a big fan of premarital, but I'm a bigger fan of postmarital.
Oh, yeah.
Come and see me, talk to a counselor, do something rather than let gravity keep taking its course until you're just so bottomed out.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
So good. That's
right
good.
On.
Because there would be some who are struggling with that today. They're just like, I don't know if anyone's going to help, so we're just kind of writing it off, or if we're honest, we're kind of proud and we don't want to go. Mm-hmm. But we would say it's worth it. It's worth it to get out.
Definitely. Yeah. It was our best $50.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
You guys, I just am so grateful to get to know you better personally, and also to hear some just really great, not just experiences, but wisdom about the road you guys have walked and are walking. And I just want you to know I'm really grateful that you've had time for us today. Grateful you getting to share a little bit of your story with us, and really grateful just for your investment at Trinity Church. So just know that really is important to me, and I just love it. I love the couples, obviously you included, that we've been able to talk to and just gain some good practical wisdom and real life experience. So
thank you.
Thank you for your time today.